Hi, I'm Femi Oke, and you're watching The Stream. The organisation in the United States that supplies 40% of donated blood is facing a severe shortage. This is putting doctors in a difficult situation where they're having to make choices about patient care. This is what Emily Osment told us earlier.
The American Red Cross declared its first ever national blood crisis. We're at the lowest inventory that we have seen in over 10 years. We have sustained shortages throughout the pandemic, and this volume back and forth has caused a lot of issues with being able to get our inventory to hospitals and patients in need. The last 2 years have been very difficult on the American blood supply.
Joining the show today to talk about the blood shortage at the Red Cross, the impact and what can be done about it, a trio of doctors. So much studying right here, right in front of you. Hello, doctors. So lovely to have you. David, Ankita, Evan, welcome to The Stream. David, please introduce yourself to our global audience.
Hi, my name is David Oh. I'm the Chief Medical Officer at Hawksworth Blood Center, which is a part of the University of Cincinnati. So I'm in charge of helping to collect enough blood for our patients in need.
Good to have your expertise on this discussion. Ankita, welcome. Please introduce yourself to the Stream viewers.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ankita Sagar. I'm a primary care physician and a patient with beta thalassemia major, requiring blood transfusions every month.
All right, so lovely to have you. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. And Evan, welcome to the Stream. What does our international audience need to know about you?
Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Evan Tomkiewicz. I am a critical care physician as well as emergency medicine physician at Indiana University.
Good to have you. All right, you've heard the expertise. If you want to know about donating blood and the US shortage from the Red Cross, this is what you need to do. If you're on YouTube, comment section's right here. Ask your questions, put your comments in there. I'll try and put them into today's show. Evan, first of all, and yes, let's try and work out how serious is this shortage by the American Red Cross. What are we talking about? Are they about to run out tomorrow, next week? What's the situation? Can you sum it up for us?
I think in total overall, we're facing a significant shortage is the thing. It's not going to run out today, tomorrow, but as we move into the future, it's going to be harder and harder to secure blood. And in the United States, blood allocation is done based on how much you use blood at your hospital system. And so where you're going to see it a lot is in the small community hospitals, the small town hospitals across America that maybe only have one or two units of blood that are allocated to them. And if you had one trauma patient who came in there, when I see them in the emergency department, it's not uncommon to go through 10 units of blood while caring for them. Mm-hmm. And so immediately your whole blood storage is depleted at your hospital, and you have to start talking to other area hospitals to get that blood. And I think that's what we're going to see a lot more of in the coming future.
David, obviously everyone's thinking, why, what's going on? My first thought was it's got to do something to do with COVID because people aren't going to be comfortable giving blood. And we've been told that we should stay away, social distance. How can you do that and give blood at the same time? Is that the key to the issue, David?
So certainly a portion of this is related to COVID. And one of the big issues really for us is not really donors coming out, because blood donors in the United States have really responded when asked to in face of tragedies, and I would include COVID-19 as one of these events. We're really facing shortages in our staffing and the people who can actually collect the blood. So many, many blood drives have been canceled, not only because of issues with donors and organizations faced with COVID, but because we actually don't have the staff to be able to collect the blood. I would like to make a statement kind of based on the 40% of blood collected in America's through Red Cross. Many people are not aware that that is 40% of the blood supply, but the rest is collected by other organizations. So my organization, Hawksworth Blood Center, is part of the University of Cincinnati. We're an independent regional blood center, and our supply actually is very healthy right now. We supply 30 hospitals in a 19-county area, and those hospitals actually have very good supplies. We do share one hospital with a national blood provider where they provide most of the blood because of geographic issues. We're like 2.5-3 hours away from them. And they have told me that they now are just receiving one unit of O a day, and they usually like to keep a supply of about 25 to 30 O's in their inventory. So they are now being forced to allocate and triage the patients that they have with a very limited blood supply, and knowing that no additional units are coming their way. So they have asked us to supplement their supply, and we're working on trying to do that for them.
And Keith, I'm just wondering how anxious you are when you're hearing about this national blood shortage from the American Red Cross, who supply so much of donated blood. As somebody who uses blood donations or blood banks all of the time, how are you right now? How are you watching the news? How are you following this? This must be quite nerve-wracking.
Absolutely. I think there is definitely a sense of anxiety associated with every transfusion appointment that we make, because folks like me, and outside of thalassemia, there's a lot of other illnesses that require blood transfusions. You know, we really depend on the donors to come forward and allow us to be able to function in life. You know, simple things like being able to go to the grocery store and run our errands. We do require their kindness and being able to come forward.
I'm just looking at what the impact might be if there's a shortage for various different reasons, some to do with COVID, some to do with staff moving on and vacancies being there, some to do with not enough people at blood drives, etc., what that impact may well be. So earlier we spoke to Carsten Cunningham, and he told us the impact that he was seeing in his region. Have a listen, have a look.
Blood donations are down. We are seeing blood drives canceled due to lack of turnout. And a big reason for that is the ongoing pandemic and the Omicron variant. That's a big reason why people are not showing up to donate blood right now. Either they're sick, cases are high right now, or they're afraid of getting sick right now. So the cases are spiking here in the state of Oklahoma. And we're always concerned about the blood supply, because it takes 1,200 donors a day to meet our state and area needs for our local hospitals. So we're always concerned about it, but especially right now with the ongoing pandemic, it really is cutting into our numbers here locally and certainly nationally as well.
Evan, I can see you nodding, pick up off the back of Carsten Cunningham there.
Yeah, and I think he hits on a couple of those key points. You know, without continued blood transfusions all the time and without continued donation all the time, we run into that issue very quickly. I have patients who I see here who have to make that tough decision about, you know, when their hemoglobin, you know, the number we look at to determine whether or not a patient needs a transfusion starts to drop, and it's on the borderline of our cutoff, do we transfuse them or do we wait and see how they do? When if blood wasn't necessarily an issue, we certainly would transfuse them. And so we're starting to have to make those decisions, and I'm seeing it, especially with some of our rarer types of blood, O being one of those rare types of blood. And as basically David was saying, that, you know, hospitals are getting one unit when they were used to getting 25 units. Mm. And you could see how that could quickly cause a big shortage in a hospital.
Yeah, and Keita, go ahead. What are you thinking? Yeah.
I agree with Evan. And the way that I want to think about this is, so as a primary care doctor, a lot of times I am working in collaboration with other doctors that maintain a chronic transfusion plan for patients. And sometimes I will have to make that call to say, hey, let's hold off another week because maybe we can stretch this out for one more week. But on the flip side, if the patient is feeling sick, they're going to go to an ER, and the local ER is already up to its brim trying to deal with COVID and everything else that's going on in the hospital. So our effort to keep people out of the ER that's not needed may get impacted because people really do require this transfusion and there's no supply anywhere else.
I've got some questions on YouTube, David. I'm going to start off with you because there's some myths that we need to bust, and some people may not be understanding exactly how you give blood and who can give blood. So this is Narrow Pater. And is the shortage due to the vaxxed not being able to donate blood? So there are a couple of things there that you can perhaps clear up for us so we can educational as well as informational. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. So, yeah, there's a lot of misunderstanding about who can donate blood and who can't donate blood. And if we're actually taking and testing for vaccination. So we are routinely not performing any tests that would look for people who have either had COVID-19 or are vaccinated. One of the things that we're really fortunate about with this with COVID-19 going on is that it does not appear to be transmitted through blood. So we want people to be healthy and well.
Who's either had COVID at some time in the past or has been vaccinated. So please do not say you can't donate because you've been vaccinated or had COVID. That is just not the case.
All right. Another question. This is from Liz Rainey. And Liz, this is a good question. I'm going to put this one to you, Ankita. Liz wants to know, why haven't I heard more about this on the news? This seems to be like an underreported story. Go ahead.
So it's a great question. Thank you for asking the question. One of the things I think happens is a lot of times, at least patients like myself or primary care physicians, we just find another way to go about it without really amplifying the need. But what we've now realized is we do need a consistent supply of blood to make sure we don't find ourselves back into this shortage in the near future or going forward ever. So we do need a little bit more amplification and the voices to be empowered to come out and request for folks to come forward.
So it seems to me that this is a really timely time to have the conversation before we're in a desperate situation. Evan, have you ever seen a situation where you literally have no blood? Is that possible? Could that happen?
It could happen, certainly. Like I said, I work out in a lot of our community hospitals, small hospitals in the surrounding area. And the critical access hospitals are only allocated a short, very limited number of units of blood. And the problem with the emergency department, too, is I don't know your blood type when you walk in the door. And that leaves me very limited with what I can give you, leaving me just usually with O blood until I have to wait an hour and a half, 2 hours to get a lab back before I can get you a specific type of blood. And so when I'm working in my small community centers, we'll go over, you know, we kind of talk about the bed situation in the hospital, what we're looking like in terms of that, what we're looking like in terms of blood. And I've had situations where I've had trauma patients that I've given all of our blood to.
Okay, I was going to do it right after.
Usually after that, we basically talk to our sort of other hospitals and try to get some blood back in and move some things around. But it can be really hard, especially if you used all your blood already.
We were hearing your thoughts, Ankita. Go ahead, articulate them.
So sorry. I think Evan brings up a really important point that I try to tell my patients. A lot of us do not know our blood type. So one of the myths that I want to really make sure people understand is that while you will be subject to some sort of testing and your insurance is not going to be charged for that testing when you go for a blood donation, one of the most important tests that is available to blood donors is your blood type. And it's really important for everybody to know their blood type and have their family members be aware of what their blood type is.
All right, so there's a controversial part of donating blood, which people don't always think about. But if you work in the field, you know what that controversy is. So first of all, David, help us out. There's a list of people who cannot donate blood. Would you very quickly do that list for us?
Foreign travel is one reason. If you travel to a malarial area, I think what you're getting to is...
Yeah, do the full list before we get to... And then you can do the controversial one right at the end, because then we can get into that one. David knows where I'm going. All right, but do the list of less controversial things, because this may well help us with getting more blood into the system if there are fewer people who are... You cannot donate blood because you fall into this category. So David, do the categories.
Yeah. So we do want folks to be generally well and healthy, and sure. You certainly have to be well and healthy on the day of donation. If you have a long-term chronic health issue, which would make donating blood not safe for you, then we would ask you not to donate.
What would that be, for instance?
Like congestive heart failure or pulmonary issues, those types of things there, where you really need to keep that blood for yourself.
Yeah.
There are certain medications, and there's a medication list that's available through AABB.org, or you can contact your local blood center that can tell you what medications you should not be on. And many of these are for donor safety purposes, as well as for certain patients that should not receive any any of this medication for themselves. There's malarial travel or travel to foreign countries where you may have infectious diseases that you may recently contracted where you would not want to donate and possibly transmit that to another person through transfusion. And then I think MSM is one where men who have had sex with other men within the past 3 months now would not be allowed to donate.
All right, so that's the one I'm going to land on, because that's the one that there's a lot of conversation and discussion about. So if you're a gay man or a bisexual man, there are rules about when you can donate blood and if you're sexually active, for instance. So I'm going to bring in Lala here, who points out that this is very old-fashioned. And then, Evan, I'm going to put you into the hot seat and respond immediately as to your thoughts about this current regulation. Here's Lala, first of all.
As a concerned citizen and as someone who works in medicine, I want to donate blood, but unfortunately, as a gay person, I can't, and neither can my husband, who is also a healthcare worker here in New York City. And unfortunately, this is a very common experience among many people in the gay, bisexual, and transgender community because of very archaic, antiquated, and flat-out homophobic policies that the FDA has towards blood donation.
Evan, how's the conversation going in the United States about this issue?
Well, I think he hit some of the key things. You know, it's old policies that were clearly working through. You know, it used to be that if you ever had sex with a man, you know, you could not donate blood. And now we're down to the 3 months. And I think as our detection and our viral detection and blood screening has gotten better with time, we've taken a look at some of these policies and continue to have conversations about them in order to reverse that and look forward at just collecting blood from everyone.
Mm-hmm. David, weigh in on this one.
But first of all, you
go ahead, because you knew it was controversial the moment I opened my mouth about this. Go ahead.
So, you know, the initial ban on MSM, right, was in the age of HIV, when we didn't have a test and we were trying anything we could to prevent transmission of HIV through blood transfusion. So that's the early 80s, and totally appropriate at that time, and really helped save a lot of lives, I think. As we developed better tests, the first HIV test came out in 1985. We now do nucleic acid testing, so the risk of getting of receiving HIV through transfusion is about 1 in 2 million as an estimate, and I actually think that's low. Mm-hmm. So it's an incredibly rare occurrence now. FDA changed the deferral period from ever having MSM once since 1977 to in the most recent 12 months, several years ago. And then in December of last year, so a little over a year ago, FDA, in the wake of COVID-19, decreased that period from 12 months to 3 months.
Right. Wow.
There are many other countries now that are performing studies and are adapting different questions so that people are not excluded simply because of their sexuality.
Yeah.
And it's more based on actual risk factors. Canada is one of those countries. In Europe, there are many countries that have done that. And that is undergoing current discussion today here in the United States as well.
All right. So let me share with you an international headline. This is France just lifted homophobic blood ban on men who have sex with men. That's what MSM means. And then earlier in our program production, we spoke to the interim president of the Human Rights Campaign, or they sent us this statement. And their perspective is the current policy is outdated. It does not reflect the state of the science and continues to unfairly stigmatize one segment of society. So if you were very sexually active and say that you were having sex across with a different gender and not with another man, nobody asks you whether you can give blood or not. There are no rules there. You may well be more active and more at risk than somebody who has a long-term partner or who's married and they're in a same-sex relationship. So that is why there is the controversy, just stating the obvious there. So that is a debate. Let's look at some other ways that perhaps we may be able to increase more blood donation. Ankita, I love in a tweet recently, you said this. Let me just share it here. Here we go. Since I have received more than 500 units of blood in my lifetime, I consider myself an expert blood recipient. So expert blood recipient. How do we get more people to donate?
Sure. I think I'm a big believer in positive reinforcement. Mm. So this tweet, actually, the context of it was my sister and my family encouraging me to express gratitude openly towards blood donors.
Okay.
Because one of the connections that's missing is the fact that you have all of these blood donors that come out and they volunteer their time, they volunteer a precious resource to us, and they don't hear from us. They have no idea who we are.
Yeah.
So really sharing these stories to say, listen, I can now go on walks with my dog and spend time with my family only because you exist.
Yeah.
And my life is indebted to you.
See, I would just give you blood right away, Ankita, if I was the right blood type, because look at your face. How could I deny that? I would like, yes, have some. Take my arm.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do a little explainer as to what it means when you donate blood. So we've got a little bit of an animation so that if you're thinking about it, this is what will happen to you, very likely. Let's have a look.
A life-saving blood donation starts with a generous donor, travels through expert testing and processing, and is distributed through a dedicated team of professionals who provide it to a person in need. Start your own blood donation journey and help save a life by making an appointment today at redcrossblood.org.
See, that's really simple. David, I've got a couple of ideas back here from social media. So Options Trader told us on Twitter, they recommended a push from local towns through work and schools, maybe doing a push at sporting events or blood drives inside stadiums. You should have a blood drive bus right outside major retail stores or malls or shopping centres and do a really big push on social media. Any of these meet your seal of approval, David?
We do all of those things, yeah. We're constantly trying to get blood out.
Yeah.
One of the things is that, you know, we only have limited funds as well, you know, and the blood centers that collect are really dependent on revenue from the hospitals. And you know, perhaps the discussion is on the amount of revenue that blood centers receive so they can build a strong infrastructure to be able to handle these types of challenges more easily in the future. But yeah, we are constantly working with the public. And that's one of the reasons I really like the independent regional blood center model, because we work with our community and we know how to reach our donors and to be able to make sure that they can come out and donate. I would urge people to go to aabb.org and find out who their local blood supplier is and to go and make an appointment to go ahead and donate blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that really applies to you, whether you're in the US or wherever you are in the world, however you can help your fellow citizen. That's well worth doing. All right, so on YouTube, Evan, I'm going to give this to you. No Such Thing 8 says, just offer some money for blood donation. Problem solved. Pay people for their blood. Why is that not the case, Evan? What's the issue?
Yeah, I think in the United States, it goes back to we don't often think about blood as a transplantation, but organ transplantation is actually what we think about it more along the lines of in medicine. We don't just look at your simple blood type. We look at a lot of other factors to determine if you're the right match for blood. And so in the United States, there's lots of laws about whether or not you can give organs and those kinds of things and in terms of paying for organs. And so it falls into those issues of can you pay for this and how do you reimburse people for it?
Mm. I'm just going to give you all...
I think there are social equity questions.
Sure.
I'm sorry, this is David.
Yeah, David.
I think there are social equity questions that go along with paying donors as well. You know,
yeah.
We have most of our blood donors here are giving of themselves and really trying to be... positive forces in society. If we're paying blood donors to come and donate, it becomes incredibly transactional.
Yeah.
And I think that many of our current blood donors would stop donating. And we'd be then preying on the most vulnerable portion of our society to give transfusions to folks.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. David, Ankita, Evan, thank you so much for helping us understand why there's a blood shortage from the American Red Cross, who supply 40% of the blood donated in the United States, and how we may well be able to get past that hump and make sure that everybody who needs donated blood can get it. Thanks for watching, everybody. I really appreciate your questions and your curiosity. I will see you next time. Take care.